Hey everybody, Nick Blizzy here, hanging out for our monthly live call as part of the Inner Circle. I am here with an incredible human being. His name is Seja Popham. We are going to dive into the realms of plant medicine today. Something that I know a lot of you are interested in. You know, I'm interested in a lot of the work that we do. Starting with the Sacred Science film, where we took eight patients down to the middle of the Amazon rainforest to heal themselves using a number of the plants, a number of the, over 100,000 species of unidentified, or at least not unstudied for their medicinal value plants in the Amazon that only the indigenous people down there have any understanding of. So plant medicine, it's kind of how I got started on this path. It's an honor to be here with Seja today. I'm just going to read a quick little bio, then we're going to get started. Seja's mission is to create a new paradigm of plant medicine based on the synergy of herbal traditions from across the world with modern science and spirituality. His approach is to use plants to not just heal the body, but to attend to our psychological, emotional, and spiritual health, facilitating the soul's evolution. He has an incredible book out. I would usually wait until the end of the call to kind of give a little shout out to a book, but it's such a great book that you all should get it. It is called The Evolutionary. It is called Evolutionary Herbalism, Science, Spirituality, and Medicine from the Heart of Nature. Honored to be here with you today, Seja. How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here and to get a chance to meet you and hang out and share with your community.
Totally, man. And everybody who's watching, if you think for a second that Sage's background is just, a really cool thing that he superimposed behind himself, you think again. That is all real. That is
It's
Sage's
real.
environment.
Yeah, real books, real glassware, everything.
It's so good. We were just talking about it before we got on the call that it's just such a beautiful setting.
We were
Raised
going for like we were kind of going for like Professor Snape's laboratory, kind of a little bit, you know,
Totally,
or old
totally.
world apothecary, you know.
Yes, it's so good, dude. Let me say a quick hi to everybody. Hi, Pam from Pennsylvania. Hi, Shannon from North Carolina. Someone from Ontario, represent Canada. Colette from Virginia. Lanice from Chicago. Joan from freezing UK. It's freezing in the UK. That's interesting. I wish it was freezing here in Colorado. Where are you calling us? Where are you coming to us from, Seja?
I live in the Pacific Northwest, so I'm in Northwest Washington State.
Okay, cool. What town, roughly speaking? What's the closest
Yeah,
town
so
to me?
I live way out in the sticks, so but the closest town people might have heard of would be Bellingham.
I was gonna say, I was thinking maybe Bellingham. Cool. All right.
Yeah, so I'm right in the kind of up in the foothills of Mount Baker, east of Bellingham. It's a beautiful area here. It's a very unique environment where we have the mountains and the forests and the rainforest, and then going down into the water and the sound and all of the coastal area. So it's a really unique ecosystem here in the Pacific Northwest where, yeah, mountains and water come together.
That's so cool. I can't imagine. I wasn't into mushroom hunting, but I used to live in Washington State. I lived in Seattle for a
Oh,
little
cool.
while. Wasn't into mushroom hunting when I lived out there. That was in my mid-20s. But I got to imagine there's some crazy bananas mushroom hunting that you're able to do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Chanterelles are always
I'd
popping this
say
time of
chanterelles.
year. Yeah, you can head east a little bit and get morels. Usually, like in the spring, is when a lot of folks go out for the morels. But yeah, we got a lot of mushrooms grow out here, definitely.
Yeah, man. So I live in Boulder, and we have a serious porcini season here. We have decent chanterelles
Oh.
further up in the mountains, but I've never seen a porcini harvest like this before. It's like, when it's a good year, it's just like you're in the middle of you off the beaten path somewhere up in the mountains, you'll just kind of stumble upon this magical clearing of just nothing but big mushrooms popping up everywhere. It's crazy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, those porcinis are tasty.
Oh my gosh, they're so good. I have like jars and jars of them. How did you get on this path? That's the most obvious place to start. How did you, were you always someone who was like interested in herbalism and working with plants in general?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when I think about, especially now I'm getting older and looking in retrospect, how the different pieces of the puzzle have clicked into place over time.
Right.
Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a doctor. So I grew up. It's funny, my stepmom actually gave me a picture, framed picture that I had drawn when I was like 5 or whatever, you know, and it was like this little stick figure in a white lab coat with a little cross on it, with like, you know, the old doctors, they wear that big round mirror on their forehead, you know, those big round thing. And it said, "When I grow up, I want to be a docker," the DOKOR. And
Nice.
so, you know, ever since I was a kid, I really wanted to, I just knew in my heart of hearts that I was here to be a doctor, be a physician, be a healer of some sort. That took a lot of permutations as I grew up from, you know, only really knowing about conventional medicine throughout my childhood. So I was considering going into surgery. I wanted to either be a neurosurgeon or a cardiothoracic surgeon. And then I just ended up experiencing some disillusionment around, I would say, the conventional medical paradigm. I grew up in a household of a whole bunch of failed Western medicine, basically, in my family. I just got real questioning of whether that was the direction I wanted to take. And when I'm gonna like late teenage years, early 20s, I guess my parents probably would have said I turned into a hippie, you know. So I just got more into, you know, natural lifestyle, you know, appreciation and love of nature. I was an avid hiker and backpacker and just loved being out in the forest. And for me, there was always a sense of being connected to something greater than myself and nature that kind of opened up, I would say, my spiritual path for me. And that kind of gradually led to the plants and to herbal medicine. And I discovered that Bastyr University up here in the Pacific Northwest. And so I ended up going to their the herbal science program there at Bastyr with the goal of, or the idea of, going into the naturopathic program and becoming a naturopath. And you know, just after being there for 2 years for herbal science, I was like, yeah, I don't know if I even really want to be a naturopath. I think I just want to be an herbalist. So that was the path I took. And for me, you know, the herbs, as I worked with plants, I noticed that not only was I more healthy physically, not only were some of the struggles that I faced in my body resolving, but I noticed that struggles of the heart and struggles of the mind were resolving. And that all of a sudden I would kind of look back over a few years and recognize that I had changed, and people around me had recognized that I had changed for the better. And I realized that those plants were not just healing me on a physical level, but there was a deeper level of healing that occurs with conscious use of herbal medicine and the connection to the intelligence of the plants, that to me reaches beyond the body and into the soul and can lead to transformational levels of healing. And that was really, for me, it's like, oh, well, they've been so good to me. You know, they've helped me and helped me feel a deeper sense of connection to something greater than myself, to nature, to the cosmos, to God, to my own self, to the essence of who I am. And that was the level of healing that I really wanted to provide to others. So that was kind of my, as I learned and healed through the plants, that was kind of my philosophy was starting to be shaped of what kind of herbalist I wanted to be. And that has kind of led me down all sorts of interesting pathways and traditions and travels and things like that. So yeah, it's just a little bit of my background, how I got into all this.
That's cool. So in terms of like on the spiritual side of things, when you first were you raised in a relatively religious or spiritual household, or and how has that evolved with your use of the plants?
Yeah. Well, it's I grew up in a divorced household. So
Yeah.
I grew up, well, originally my folks divorced when I was about four. And so I grew up, or even younger, I think there was three or something. Anyways, I would go 4 days at dad's, 3 days at mom's, 3 days at dad's, 4 days at mom's. So my whole childhood was this split. And so my mother is atheist. And my father's and stepmom, Presbyterian Christians. And
Nice.
so very interesting dynamic there, right? And it's I've reflected on this a lot where there was a part of me that was, going to church when I'd be at dad's, and then there was a part of me that was, my mom really encouraged me. She didn't like push onto me like there's no such thing as God, but there was just kind of this encouragement to like figure it out for myself of like, hey, I'm
Yeah.
not going to impose anything onto you. You should find out for yourself. Which on the one hand I actually really appreciate, but on the other hand it's like, hey, you're a kid. Sometimes having a little bit of guidance is good too, So it's interesting as I've grown, I think. For me, spirituality kind of evolved from just my own kind of just stumbling around and feeling like, oh, nature, I feel something greater when I'm in nature. And then a big turning point for me actually was before Bastyr, I was living in Southern California going to college, and I did a course on the philosophy of religion. And that class was actually a major turning point for me because it was a really good kind of analysis of the major world religions. But then that course kind of completed discussing just mysticism and the human's direct experience with God, which in a lot of ways is at the root of most of the world's religions, right? Is there's prophets and visionaries and people that had a direct main line to God. And that really resonated with me. And so that kind of got me into more of just, I guess, mysticism and wanting to cultivate my own relationship to God. And, but now that, now I'm getting older, I think I've kind of been starting to come back a little bit, and I've been circling back around to Christianity a little bit. And I would not call myself a Christian per se, because I don't even actually really fully understand what that means.
Yeah.
But going into the teachings a little bit more and recognizing like there's some really great stuff here,
Totally.
some really good teachings there that I think are valuable. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey. Always changing for sure.
Something that really interested me about your work and your book is that you incorporate more than just, it's not like it isn't just working with herbs and this herb's good for that and that herb's good for that, almost like a James Duke kind of approach, which is also amazing. And I understand the importance of just straight up, like, I guess treating herbs in a more of an allopathic fashion, or at least treating herbs using more of a science first type of approach. I feel like your approach sort of weaves in all different dimensions of consciousness into the work, which I am fascinated by. I personally try to do in our little collectives here in Boulder, and I mean, I am surrounded by people who are also doing it, and I feel like it's where the for me it's where the rubber meets the road. It's where the nectar is. It's where the beauty of all it is. But I was struck by the astrological aspect of what you do, and I wanted to really dive into that, like unpacking how the motion of these bodies that are so far away from us and the positioning of these different, planetary and stellar entities has an impact on our reality, and also potentially has an impact on the potency of the herbs we use.
Well, that is really one of the things that I didn't expect to get into. Honestly, when I was like getting into herbal medicine, and yeah, what you're saying for me was a big I get not red flag, but just thing that I kind of struggled with when I would study herbs was that, like just what you said, that allopathic approach. The use this herb for that symptom mindset actually doesn't work a lot of the time for herbs. I think that's why a lot of people try herbs and they don't work.
Right,
Because
right.
it's like, oh, I have a headache. I took some willow bark and it didn't do
It
anything.
didn't work.
It's like,
Yeah.
well, yeah, it's because there's lots of different kinds of headaches and lots of different kinds of plants that affect headaches for lots of different reasons with many different properties. And so for me, it came down to, the difference between a traditional vitalist model, whereby we recognize that the human being is not just a machine. We're not just composed of a bunch of biochemical gears, but that we are a, there is a vital intelligence that animates the human organism, that instills us with consciousness, that instills us with intelligence, that instills our body with consciousness and with intelligence. And it's easy, like when I say consciousness and intelligence, a lot of people think like, oh, that's like up here and that's like out here, but it's not in here. It's like, no, it's in here, right? That consciousness and that intelligence of the vital force, the spirit of nature and of life is inside of us. And that's what the makes our bodies so brilliant in the way that they function. And so for me, when we look at a traditional perspective on the human organism and on plants too, is that it's said that the body is a microcosm of nature. The body is a microcosm of the macrocosm, that everything that's out there, the whole order of the cosmos and nature and creation out there is present in here. And that was something that I was first, a concept I was kind of first introduced to when studying Ayurveda. And then when I got into studying Western alchemy, they said the same things. And a part of that was the elements, right? The elements of life, the earth, the water, the air, the fire, the ether, what in the West they call the quintessence. This is a universal principle amongst Western herbal traditions, Eastern herbal traditions, not just herbal traditions, but medical traditions, spiritual traditions. Anyone, basically anyone that was paying attention to nature recognized the elements are fundamental to all of creation. And the same is true for celestial bodies. And so in the alchemical worldview, the structure of the cosmos, the ordering of the planets, the way the firmament is established, and the pattern of it, the order of it, is reflected within the human psyche. It's also reflected within the human body. And so that's the whole domain of medical astrology, which is seen as kind of one of the sister sciences to alchemy. Like whenever you get really deep into the alchemical worldview, naturally astrology tends to kind of piggyback along with it. And so that's where I started studying medical astrology as a means for understanding the human organism and what's going on within the body, and as a means for assessing our health and our disease and our predispositions. And then that ultimately translates over to, for me as an herbalist, then how I understand the plants. And as I started studying astrology and medical astrology, and then thinking about herbs, it became very apparent that there was direct correlations between plants and planets. Even in the etymology of the word plant and planet, they come from the same root. And so in alchemy, the plants are seen as, well, plants are seen as terrestrial stars, and planets are seen as celestial plants in a lot of ways. And so there's a connection. They mirror one another. And that in alchemy, it's said that the plants are, in a way, like a bridge between the human organism and the celestial world when prepared alchemically and taken, when alchemical preparations are used. It's that they are working on what Paracelsus would refer to as the inner starry sky, right? The inner celestial bodies. And that triggers kind of that evolutionary process, the evolution of human consciousness and the healing of the body, which is really the ultimate goal of alchemy, right? And the quest for the philosopher's stone, that being, a permanent state of higher consciousness, basically an enlightened state of consciousness, and the elixir of immortality, which would be a rejuvenated state of physical health, and rejuvenation. So for me, a lot of my work over the years has been, okay, how do I take the model of medical astrology and alchemy and overlay that onto how we typically think of herbs in traditional systems like Ayurveda or Chinese medicine or traditional Western herbalism and even modern science? Like, what's the pattern? What's the golden thread that connects those things? Because as I studied all these different traditions, I would just constantly see the same thematic elements emerge. I would see many similarities amongst these traditional models. And of course, they had their differences too, but in the grand scheme of things, I felt like they had a lot more similarity than difference. And so a lot of my work has been, what are those universal patterns? Like, what is the universal pattern of nature and the cosmos that is present within people and plants? And through that, how can we understand the essence of a plant, understand the essence of a person, and bring them together in a way that will bring about a level of transformational healing. And I find the planetary correlations of plants is a really useful model for doing that. When you look at, say, someone's astrological chart, a lot of times you look at, people tend to think of, oh, my astrology chart is like my personality, or it's my, it's just going to kind of tell me who I am, right? There's a lot of ways, like, oh, pop astrology is like, oh, look up your sun sign, and it's just going to tell you who you are. But in more of an evolutionary approach to astrology, we see, oh, this is like a map of the human soul and what lessons you are presented with in this life in order to further your soul's growth and development. But then the medical side says, this is a map of your body. This is the state of your organ systems and your tissues. This is where you might be a little bit weak. This is where you might be a little bit strong. This is where you might be tend towards some excesses. Here's where you might be a little bit deficient, but it's the same map. And so what's cool about that is that you are now able to see that dotted line that connects the physical health of the body with the health of the mind, the emotions, and the evolutionary pathways that the soul is striving to learn in this lifetime. And so we all talk about being holistic, right? We all hear that phrase, body, mind, and spirit, right? Well, what's so cool about the system is it's literally all integrated into one cohesive system. It's not like in herbalism, you see this a lot. Oh, well, if you want to work on, the psycho-spiritual side or the emotional side, you got to use like a flower essence or plant spirit healing or something over here. And then if you want to work on the body, you
Right.
maybe use a tincture or a tea or a capsule. With the alchemical model, it's like those separations. Those dividing lines that separate those things are dissolved, and those things are really united, which is ultimately a big part of the goal of alchemy too, right? Is the union of heaven and earth, the union of the celestial and the terrestrial, the above, the below. And that is represented externally, but it's also represented internally, within ourselves. So, meandering, wandering answer. I don't even know if I answered your question, but those are the thoughts that came to mind based on your question.
Listen, I only think in a zigzag pattern. I don't know straight lines. I was just gonna, what I had so many questions when you were just talking. I guess one is this idea of separation as being a big obstacle for a lot of folks on their personal evolutionary paths, and also, on the healing path. And I'm not sure, again, like, if there's any real difference between the two. It feels like that's something that's really fertile right now in terms of where a lot of our conversations are going these days, is this notion that we think that spiritual is this one thing, and then physical is this other thing, emotional is this other thing, mental is this other thing. And like the
Yeah.
more you start diving into like, you know, I guess I'm more on the I guess I'm more on the Buddhist of the Buddhist mindset these days. I've been meditating a ton for the last few years and just been kind of like systematically deprogramming, decalcifying my inner whatever you want to call it. And as I do it, the more it becomes apparent that I've labeled so many things and thought I knew what they were. And, you know, I sort of did it because it's kind of what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to know, have an answer for everything, or at least be able to speak intelligently about things. And in doing so, we a lot of times start, you know, fooling ourselves into thinking that we know what something is just because we know the word for it. And
Yeah.
I feel like there's this unraveling that's necessary, you know, for especially when you're trying to work through an illness, and especially when you're trying to work through a mental conundrum or a mental block or challenge. I feel like, you know, those are like the potent like portals of like, now you have to do this. You might not have wanted to, but now you have to if you want to actually get better. Or through just being proactive and pursuing a spiritual path, even when you're in perfect physical health. Either way, it seems to require the unraveling of all the things that you thought you knew. And so you're at least
Yeah.
starting with a blank slate, you know, and you can just start building off of, you know, a more experiential first, I guess, way of gathering data, as opposed to just thinking you know things because you were told things and you read books. And I feel like what you're talking about sort of has a lot of that. For me, like it's beautiful to hear you put it into words, because it really does kind of like feel like it's that same thing, like this idea that astrology is over here and, you know, herbalism's over here and, you know, emotional health is over here. It's just like it feels like the more you unravel it, the more it feels like everything is everything, you know, and
Yeah.
the idea that there's that the, and separation's great, but it cannot, but it's also a trap. And I'm not even sure what the heck my question is in there. I was just.
Well, I've got lots of things to, yeah, you're making some, well, the first thing that you said that I thought of, which was you're talking about the spiritual path and healing. To me, I always say those are two sides of the same leaf. And because it makes sense, right? Like, think of it, even on a very simple term of like, okay, what do we, well, what is evolution? What is like our the development? It is like an we're obtaining a greater level of self-organization and capacity to be in harmony within ourselves and within our environment. It's our ability to handle perturbations to our system so that we can maintain coherence in our system, right? And so then there's this greater level of complexity that we become a part of. And then that's what really what healing is. So if you think of like what you're, if you have a broken leg, right? You are pretty limited in your capacity to walk around, to do things, to go on hikes, to play with your kids, whatever it might be. And if you heal that broken leg, then in a way you could think of that as being an evolutionary thing, right? Because now you have enhanced your capacity to do more, essentially, right? And that's a very simplistic example, but to me, the if we think of healing, like a lot of people that get into the spirituality recognize this pretty quickly, right? It's like, oh, you find your spiritual path, and it's like this really exciting thing. And oh, okay, I want to learn, and I want to grow, and I want to meditate, and I want to go or go to church or go in nature, whatever it might be. And we get this really excitement about our spirituality, right? We wake up, right? And then all of a sudden, we realize that we've got all this stuff, like you're talking about, that we got all this baggage, right? It's like Robert Bly says, we all drag around this bag of shadow behind us. And there comes a point where you have to turn around and open it up and eat it. Like you have to eat your shadow. You have to reintegrate those things that you like. You know, we spend a lot of our vital force avoiding things that we don't want to look at. But they're a part of us, and whether we avoid it or not, they're still going to impact us. And so there's a point on that spiritual path where we realize that we have to heal. That if we want to spiritually grow, there's something inside of us that we have to heal. Maybe some kind of trauma from our past. Maybe something happened. We all have a wound inside of our heart. We all have things that have happened to us that have hurt us as close to the essence of who we are as they could get. We all have something like that. And I believe that part of our spiritual development requires us to heal that part of the self. And so we have to turn around and we have to look back and we have to integrate the shadow and we have to forgive and we have to let go and we have to ultimately move on. And I think that's the trap. And that's something that I've been talking about a lot lately is the trap of this, though, because we want to grow spiritually. And then we say, oh my God, I have to heal. I have all this healing work to do. I have to do the work. You hear that a lot. I gotta do the work, right? And then people get really focused on their healing. That's good, but I see a lot of people get stuck in that. And then they're always focused on, oh, this thing from my, oh, my trauma here, and this thing from my past there, and oh, well, this thing happened, and this is why I'm this way. And they just get way tangled up in it, and they don't let it go, and they're constantly going back, and they're constantly, oh, I need to do another retreat, or I need to do another session, or I need to do another this, or another that. And I think there comes a point where it's like, you recognize it, it happened, you can't change the past. You accept it, you learn from it, you forgive, and you move forward. There comes a point where you have to move forward. I see so many people out there on this healing path that ultimately they become narcissists and they become
Yes. Oh my
so
God.
focused. They become so focused on themselves
Yeah.
and their own healing, and they can be, get very kind of, what's the word? Kind of almost putting other people down. Oh, well, they
Yeah.
don't understand because they haven't started their healing journey yet. And
Coaches
I'm like,
signaling.
whoa. Yeah, it's like, whoa, we got to be careful here. We're talking about the
Oh
spirit.
man.
We're talking about healing. We got to be very careful about how we conduct ourselves and how and I just, yeah, it's something I've become really aware of over the last number of years. And I've been talking about it a lot more of like, hey, there comes a point you just got to move on with your
Yeah.
life. You can't focus back there. You got to move on. Yep, bad stuff happens. So healing and evolution to me, two sides of the same leaf. And anytime you want to heal, right? To flip it, we want to heal. Maybe you have a chronic disease, right? Maybe you have chronic digestive problems or autoimmune disease or arthritis or you're overweight and got diabetes, whatever it might be. Well, we tend to get there, not all the time, but oftentimes we get there because of the decisions that we make every day, because of our habits, because of our patterns, because of our rhythms, because of our thoughts, because of our social life, because of all of these things. A lot of times, in order to heal those things, it's not just take the pill the doctor gave you, or take the herb the herbalist gave you, or go drink a psychotropic plant medicine down there. It's like you have to meet it halfway. You have to change, right?
Yes.
Which means you have to evolve. I always say you have to meet your medicine halfway, regardless of what kind of medicine it is. And so that's one thing I'm always saying too, is that in order for us to heal, typically we have to change. And this is why I'm always telling my students that are clinical practitioners, it's like you can't just expect to hand people a bottle of herbal medicine and for all of their problems to magically disappear. Like typically they have to make some changes in their lifestyle, in their sleep habits, in the food that they eat, for sure is a big one these days. So yeah, healing and evolution or spiritual side, to me, they really go hand in hand, and they are two sides of the same leaf. Yeah, so anyway, so you're talking about that. That was kind of one thing that comes to mind, that I recognize in myself too, you know, not of course not being perfect in any way. I think some of those things I was mentioning there though are important to understand because we have to be careful to there's like all these kind of tricky almost like traps on the healing path that can be easy to fall into and get stuck in and I think the ultimate goal is to move forward in a good way, to be a good one, to be a good person, you know, like real simple
Totally.
stuff. I think for people that are wanting to be a healer or an herbalist or a physician of any kind, it's like I always say we have to heal ourselves so that we can better heal other people. That the level of medicine we have to offer another per like the level of medicine that we carry that can it can only go deep in another person in the equivalent of depth we've gone into within ourselves. There's kind of a similarity there. And I think that's a big part of the integrity of being an herbalist, a physician, a healer. That's what Paracelsus talked about of virtue. It was one of his core pillars of his system of medicine was the development of virtue, that he says that the healer should really be striving to live in accordance with the highest morality, the highest virtues, to be, in his terminology, to strive to be Christ-like, right? To strive to be living in accordance with the divine law set forth by God in the language of nature and in the laws of nature. And I think that involves, I say, healer, heal thyself is very important, but do it so you can better heal other people. If you forget that part, then you end up just focusing on yourself too much, and then you're not helping anyone. So, yeah.
I feel like the words that keep coming up when we talk about this is the idea of permanence versus impermanence. I mean, it's like just starting in my old age to start really understanding like the value of what of these like Buddhist teachings. The idea of striving for permanence, it always leads to suffering. Like, and so the idea of trying to crystallize your reality using some story that you're telling yourself. So you might be the person who I live in Boulder. I have got everybody, the spiritual narcissism thing is a serious epidemic here in Boulder. It's an epidemic and really like probably a lot of the more like progressive, like trendy, hipster kind of towns that are across the
Entire West Coast.
basically the entire West Coast, parts of the East Coast. But like I see it and like, it drives me crazy. Now I'm also very aware of the fact that the things that drive me crazy are usually because they're reflecting something within myself that I don't like. So not totally like open to all of the thing. But I think the idea of trying to make things permanent, using story, like trying to like look, spending all your time like navel gazing at your past and being like, well, this is because my dad did this, like. Okay, so you're permanently going to have that. So you want to permanently have that crutch that you can use so that you can sort of forgive yourself or allow yourself to move forward, continuing to do that thing. Usually a problem. The idea of creating a story around your new reality, your newfound spiritual understanding. I see this all the time. And again, not saying I'm immune to it either, but where a new thing is achieved, a new understanding has now been added to your quiver of things to do self-help wise. And then you start identifying with it. You start identifying with it and having it be something that you can use as social capital, as whatever you want to call it, to make yourself feel better. It's just permanence. You're trying to find these permanent footholds to make this reality a little more predictable. And do that, at least in my experience, when you do that, that is going to come between you and the medicine. It's going to come between you and your spiritual evolution. There's nothing permanent. And the idea, and when we start trying to hang our hat on something that will hopefully be there from now on, no matter whether that's a story about our past, whether that's a story about who we are right now, whether that's a story about how sort of those poor people down the street don't understand how to use herbs, so that, whatever. Like any of those stories seem to be this attempt to crystallize something that can't be crystallized, and through crystallizing it, I think we create stagnation in ourselves. And so I'm just thinking as you're talking about, the idea of us being able to be channels in a way for universal, life flow, and like handle the perturbations that are going to inevitably come our way. The idea of trying to grab and like ha and hold something as like always going to be there, it's an attachment situation. It's like it, this is attachment 101. It's attachment therapy, but attachment to the inner workings of this reality, which it's a fool's errand to try to attach. It's not going to happen, and you're going to just spin your wheels and create disease, as opposed to just letting it go. All the things we hear, surrendering, all these annoying words that unfortunately are the truth, and they, the more basic, the more potent seems to be on this path. No matter where you go, there you are. I mean, you could try to become whatever you want to be. Ultimately, this is all in a state of change. You're in a state of change. Don't try to hold on too tight. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. And I feel like, yeah, it's like there's an edge with it, right? Because it's like, why do we attach to things or name things or have a story? It's like, because there's a part, I feel like there's a part of human nature that's trying to create some semblance of order out of the chaos. And so it's like a part of our consciousness kind of needs something like that to just like create a sense of stability around us so we can function. But then it's like, to me, I bet this. The dynamic, and this is a big thing in alchemy of order and chaos, right? They talk about the prima materia as being the chaos of like everythingness and all of creation condensed to a singular point. And it's like everythingness and nothingness all at once, which is impossible for us, right? Chaos. And then order, it's like, and that's the Saturnian impulse of like the creation of order over that chaos. And I feel like the developmental edge is right at the border of those two, right? Because too much, like you're talking about, too much order creates stagnation, it creates sloth, it creates indolence, right? But too much chaos, and it's just like what you're just floating around and you have no foundation. And so it's like there's this edge of order and chaos that I always think about as the developmental edge. But I also was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about. You were talking about naming things, right? And that's like, you give something a name, or you think you know something, you hang your hat, like you said, you think you know something. And this happens in herbal medicine all the time, right? You don't know that plant. And then someone says, oh, that's Pipsissewa. And you're like, ah, Pipsissewa. Okay, well, I know it now. And it's like, no, you don't know anything about it. Right. And I think that's a trap in herbal medicine. Like, I've been studying and practicing herbal medicine for 15 years. I'm still learning about chamomile. I'm still learning about nettle leaf. I'm going to be learning about nettle leaf and chamomile until the day I die, because these plants are complex, and I think they're evolving and changing, and there's novel uses, and they're like people, right? It's like, are you ever really gonna know everything there is to know about your spouse? It's like, as soon as you think that, good luck with that relationship, right? It's like we have to, and I think it's the way I strive to be with the plants too. And so there's a, and I think what does that do? That brings humility. That brings the ability to humble ourselves before a plant and recognize that there's always going to be something new to learn about that. But knowing the name is good too, right? It helps, if you walk through a forest, picture you walk through a forest and you don't know any of the plants, you don't know even any of the names of it, right? But then you walk through a forest where you at least recognize it and you have a name for it. Well, that the act of naming, it brings it out of the chaos of everything just being kind of a forest, a mush of forest of like, there's just a lot of plants. Like, I don't know. And then, oh, but I recognize the look of that and I have a word for it, a name for it. Now that one plant has descended into an order out of that chaos. And that's ultimately what Adam's job was in the Garden of Eden. Is that he was tasked with the naming of the plants, the naming of the animals, to create a greater semblance of order out of the chaos of, creation that had just happened. So I always think about that story and how that kind of plays into, I always think about that as herbalists and plant people, as you learn names of plants. That is kind of the first step of bringing some order to it. But that doesn't mean you know it. And there's always a lot more depth there for sure.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. It almost feels like words as like a, I guess being more responsible with words, would be good for me. I can only speak about my reality, but maybe words are not the knowing of something. They're just the way of communicating points of interest that should be further explored experientially.
That's right.
I think that it's hard. It's hard a lot of the things on this path, a lot of the things in the world of shamanism, animism, herbalism, all the fun isms. It's like there's only so much we can talk about, and the rest of it is just you have to experience. Like you have to understand that chamomile isn't just this cute little flower that you put into a tea and it calms you down. It can also be psychedelic if you make a gigantic make a really potent brew of it, but you can only know that if you try it. And we can't explain, and you can't explain a lot of the realms of these things. You can't explain the deep realms of meditation. We think that we know what nothing means. We have no idea what nothing means. We can't fathom what nothing means. We have no point of reference for what
Because
nothing.
it is that which is beyond the mind.
And that's where it's beautiful. That's why I know I'll be doing this for the rest of my life, because it is so hard to try to wrangle a lot of this stuff into a thought form that can be communicated. And every time, and like I feel like every once in a while, I'll write like a 1,000-word piece that maybe does the job of starting to like maybe sort of name or put into perspective one tiny little hair on the dog on the back of the dog. There's one of them. One of them will be maybe slightly sort of have a little more dimension to it, and that's exhilarating. But the idea that we're ever going to fully know any of this stuff, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's something that'll ever happen.
Well, it's funny. It's funny. I was kind of joking around with someone about my book because, my book's pretty big. It's pretty thick. And I had to cut about 50,000 words out of that book. I think it's about a 200,000 word book. And that's like 500 something pages or whatever. That book is basically just one long definition of like what does holistic mean? Like that's really what that book is about. This is like one big long definition, and I didn't even really totally get to all of it in there. So it's funny, the way you're talking about words. But you mentioned something there too that I think is very important for herbalists and people that want to learn plants, and that is exactly what you said. It is the experience. Far too often in the world of herbal medicine, the plants are just read about, listen to someone talking about it, a lecture, a conference, a workshop, a course, and they don't even know what it looks like, what it smells like, what it tastes like, the feeling of the effect of that plant. This is something that I really came to realize, being around a lot of naturopaths, and I'm not trying to say this to put down the naturopaths, but it's just, they're busy, man. They're in medical school. They're trying to run a busy medical practice. A lot of the times their education and knowledge of understanding of the plants is very intellectually based and not experientially based. And I think the most important thing to be able to really effectively understand and use a medicinal herb is to experience it. I always use the we have a plant here in the Pacific Northwest called Oregon graperoot, Mahonia aquifolium, and it's one of those really bright yellow, bitter, very bitter roots that has high levels of isoquinoline alkaloids in it. Berberine, a lot of people have heard of berberine these days, right? That's what makes golden seal bright yellow, yellow root, philodendron, Chinese coptis. These are all berberine, kind of in a very similar class of medicine. I could tell you all that berberine's bitter, right? If I ask you what berberine or what Oregon graperoot tastes like 2 weeks from now, you probably would forget, right? But if we went out and we showed you Oregon grape and we dug a root out and cleaned it off and I had you chew on it for 15 minutes, you're going to remember for the rest of your life. That Oregon grape root is really, really bitter. Because we remember what we experience. We don't remember what we read. We don't remember what someone says. Typically, if we think back on our lives, we remember what we experience. And I think that's the most important thing for anyone that wants to learn herbal medicine. Put the medicine where your mouth is, taste it, experience it, ingest it, feel what it feels like you're learning about. Oh, this herb is a stimulant diaphoretic used for fevers. Well, take a whole bunch of it and feel what it feels like to experience a stimulant diaphoretic and make yourself really sweaty using that herb. Oh, this herb is a strong expectorant. Okay, well, take it, and make yourself cough. Experience expectoration. It's a good thing because then it's embodied, right? It's not just up here, it's in here. And I think that's the difference between memorizing knowledge intellectually versus cultivating an experiential understanding. That's the difference between memorizing and knowing something by heart. And I think it's really interesting that we have the phrase knowing it by heart versus memorizing, because on the surface they seem like the same thing, but I think deep down we all know that Knowing something by heart is a little different than memorizing, right? Because when you know something by heart, it's there. It's like anchored. Whereas something that's memorized can easily be forgotten. I think that's one of the big, I think anyone that's been a part of educational system knows that which you memorize can easily be forgotten. But I mean, you know something by heart. This is why, I was talking to my wife about it the other day, and every once in a while we'll put on music, that we grew up with back in the 90s, and we'll put on, the other day she puts like some Pearl Jam on. We're like, oh, well, I haven't heard this song in a
Yeah.
long time. Still knew all the words. How is that? I haven't heard this song in 20 years. It's like, 'cause you knew it by heart. And I think that's the way we should be with plants, right? When we're learning plants, we should learn those plants by heart. And the only way we can do that is by experiencing them.
You mentioned we only have 10 minutes, 7 minutes left, so I'm going to say this real quick, then I have another question for you.
Cool.
You mentioned Eating Shadow before, and I just wanted to shout out this book I'm reading right now that this yogi dude recommended that I check out. It's called Spiritual Cannibalism. It's by a guy named Rudy. He's this really interesting dude from like the, I don't know, the 80s and 90s was when he was kind of really writing a lot. But it's that idea of like eating shadow. People think that you should keep these things away from us. We should keep our shadows at bay and keep the darkness, try to get away from all that bad stuff, as opposed to literally ingesting it, metabolizing it, like going
Yeah.
into it, letting it come in, like the idea of letting it come in. I mean, I remember one time I was hanging out with my shop, one of my shaman buddies, Roman, and he told me it was the middle of like a snowstorm in Connecticut, and he's like, hey, let's go outside. I'm like, all right. So we walk outside, and he takes all of his clothes off, and he's like, take all your clothes off. I'm like, what? And he's like, just trust me. And we're literally standing outside naked for, well, the first 5 minutes really sucked. And I was trying to like actually keep myself like warm. And he's like, why are you doing that? He's like, you're making it worse. Like, just let it all the cold in. And
You're fighting
let
it,
all the cold
yeah.
in. And then an hour later, we're running around the woods still. I'm running around in the woods under 2 feet of snow, completely naked, running across ponds and skidding on the ponds, like, on the ice with our bare feet. Nothing was a problem. So the idea of like keeping all that cold away, keeping all that darkness away is a trap. But the one thing, the reason why I'm even bringing that up is because there is this passage of this book, Spiritual Cannibalism, that really struck me, which is the idea that there's a mechanism inside of us when it comes to achieve. This is more of a meditational Buddhist kind of like achieving these higher realms of meditation. But so there's a mechanism within us that we need to tonify, the same way you need to tonify muscles in the physical body. When you go to the gym, you're going to be doing push-ups, pull-ups, and things like that are uncomfortable, that ultimately get easier and easier and easier, and then you evolve past that. There are these mechanisms within the body that we need to tonify and exercise through use. In this case, it's deep states of meditation and things like that. But I feel like when we're talking about plants, and we're talking about how to work with plants, and how to know plants, and how to experience the effects of specific compounds of natural phytochemicals, I think it can only be done the same way. It's like what you need to start tonifying and learn and understanding those pathways of yourself that you've long forgotten about. And the more you do that, the more you ingest, which is why I think, and I was going to ask you about dieting plants. So, the idea of, hey, you want to know plant, you want to know nettle, then don't just sprinkle nettle on a pizza. Like, start ingesting nettle for a month. Start ingesting it every
Yeah,
way you possibly can.
that's
Every
right.
way, and learn, and don't expect it to come quickly. Just through repetition, start noticing subtle distinctions and subtle energetics. And I feel like it's just very similar, for me right now, the idea of like that merging of this spiritual language with the plant language, like the merging of like that, those inner mechanisms that you can't identify because there aren't words for them. There aren't things that we can't, there's landscapes that have never been given vocabulary that we need to start working with. And only way to do that is to just start doing it. And then you'll start noticing things, and you'll start being able to identify them yourself. So I guess there's a question in there. I guess maybe my question is, and maybe this is the last question we have here, is dieting a plant? Do you diet plants? I'd imagine you do. And for people listening, how would you recommend doing so?
Yeah, well, I always encourage people to ingest the plants that they want to learn. Yeah, I tend to recommend my students the slow. I always say it's better to know a few plants very, very well than a whole bunch superficially. That's just my personal preference.
Yep.
There's lots of herbalists that disagree with me on that one for sure. But I mean, I say one plant a month. Spend a month with an herb, and that by the end of that year, you'll have learned 12 herbs, but you'll know those herbs very, very well. 5 years, you know 60 plants very, very well. 10 years, you know 120 plants very, very well. And I think that's like a pre, 120 plants, that's a solid apothecary. And as you're working with those plants during that time, optimally, you can find them in nature and be with them and observe them and sit with them and make offerings to them and pray to them and introduce yourself to them and talk to them because they're alive and they're sentient and they want to get to know, if you want to get to know them, they should get to know you too. And ingesting that plant, whether that I always encourage people to ingest it in a wide variety of forms, whether that be make an infusion of it, make a decoction of it, do a little of it, do a lot of it. Take 3 drops of the tincture 3 times a day for a couple weeks. Take, if it's safe to do so, take 5 milliliters 3 times a day, which is a pretty high dose of a tincture, and see what happens. Just experience it. Like for me, I'm willing actually to imbalance my constitution a little bit, just so I can understand that herb. So if I'm taking an herb, I tend to have a pretty hot, fiery constitution, but take a hot, fiery herb. Yeah, it's going to imbalance me. It's going to drive me out of balance. But now I know how it works. And now I know if I have someone, I'm going to give that herb to someone, I can have a pretty reasonable idea as to how it's going to impact their constitution. So yeah, I generally recommend people take a month with each herb, and that's not just for your experience, but then you're also, studying it. You're pulling out all of your books and references. You're learning about its actions. You're learning about its organ affinities. You're learning about its humoral energetics and constitutional effects, its contraindications and safety, right? That's a month to focus on a multitude of aspects of that herb so that by the end of that month, you've studied it through your mind, you've studied it through your heart, you've studied it through your experience. And that's how you build this inner library of knowledge and understanding within you. And I always like to think of it as when you work with the plant like that, you can do that in a very practical way of like, oh, I'm just going to take it to experience the medicinal effects and I'm going to study it during that time. And that's great. Some people might take it and kind of see it more spiritually too, right? Where this is a time where you are attempting to come into contact with the spirit of the plant, that you want to dream with the plant, that you want to sit with the plant, that you're striving for a vision of the medicine of that plant, you're striving to come into contact with the medicinal essence of that plant, and you're in a way it's like you're courting it, right? And to me, in that way of understanding, as you're ingesting it and you're working with it in this way, it's a cultivation process where you're cultivating an inner forest. It's like you're planting seeds of that plant. The spirit of that plant is being sown inside of you, and you're watering it and you're feeding it, and it's growing and it becomes a part of you, and you carry that medicine inside of you. It becomes a part of who you are. And to me, that's how the herbalist gathers medicine, not just outside, not just gathering medicine to put on a shelf, but that's how they gather their medicine, like the inside, right? And that's how they develop, a certain healing power. It's not them, though. It's not their healing power. It's the power of the plant. It's the power of God through the plant, the power of God through the herbalist. They're just a messenger. They're just a communicator. They're just a bridge between the plant kingdom and the human kingdom, between the earth and the world. So that's kind of some of the thoughts that I have on that.
I've got so many more questions. People are chatting in the chat thread right now. You have a podcast called The Plant Path.
I do,
Can you
yeah.
give a
It's
quick
good.
quick a quick shout out about that? Because I know the folks are going to get off of this and want to dive with you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, Plant Path. You can find it on anywhere you get podcasts. So I'm pretty sure it's on Spotify. I don't think it's on SoundCloud, but definitely Apple and whatever the Android podcast provider is. And then we got a YouTube channel. Everything's on the YouTube channel as well. The podcast available, Evolutionary Herbalism. And then our website, evolutionaryherbalism.com. Everything is posted there. All of our free content's posted over there. We do more in-depth workshop series as well, every now and then. I think our next one coming up is January. We're going to be doing a free workshop, three-part workshop series called the Herbal Monograph Map. So that's going to be really cool. That's kind of focused, kind of a little bit about what I was talking about, how to learn an herb, basically, kind of like looking at a strategy for how to study plants effectively. That's a really cool workshop. I'm really excited about that. So yeah, always lots of happenings, always lots of doings over at the School of Evolutionary Herbalism. So thank you very much for the opportunity to come here and to share with your community. I really appreciate it. And for all the really great work that you have been do doing and have will continue to do, I really appreciate the opportunity to connect and to collaborate. I really enjoyed our conversation. I was like, oh boy, I feel like we could
I
probably go
know
for
that's
now, man. I'm
I
like, oh,
know.
we can narrow down hard probably for a really long time. So if you ever want to have me back, I'd be happy to come
Well, I was
back and
just gonna
chat.
say, like, I would love to do like an extended, like it'd be nice to know we had a couple hours to kind of like just freaking go, because I mean, we just started getting warmed up. I mean, I've got so much more to talk about. Yeah, man, thank you for being here. Thank you for doing all the work you do, and absolutely, let's do more.
I love it.
Awesome, man. Thank you guys. See you next month. And yeah, always a pleasure.